like every great beer, is an even better story. Welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews. Beer landscape continues to change at a very rapid pace. We're still seeing new breweries popping up every other week, but sadly, some others have closed, and the number of new beers hitting bottle shop shelves is out of control. So how do breweries cut through the clutter in a crowded market? And more importantly, how do they remain relevant in the eyes of a very promiscuous drinker base? For well-established brands Stone & Wood, their approach has been to diversify their offerings, and as such, they have created a number of other brands within the Stone & Wood family. Fixation, Forest for the Trees, and Counterculture. All of these sub-brands explore different elements of brewing and allow the company to try new ideas and reach those drinkers who are always looking for that next big thing. So to talk about how the Stone & Wood family brand Counterculture is shaking things up in the beer industry, welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews, NPD Manager Sam Martin and Creative and Community Manager Jasmine Daly. Welcome aboard, guys.
G'day, mate. How's it going?
Hey.
Thanks so much for joining me.
Hello, Chris.
I think this is going to be a fun chat. Now, look, before we get into it, why don't you guys give us the background on the Counterculture brand and where the whole idea came from?
Yeah, mate. Well, Counterculture, you know, we're about 6 months in now, but the planning and the thinking behind it's, you know, probably a couple of years old now. And simply, Counterculture's been set up as a sub-brand of Stone & Wood, and the sole purpose of it is to create personalities and tell stories and brew beer styles without the usual parameters that we've worked to in the past. So,
yep.
And yeah, it seems to be working really well so far, and we've been having a good time over the last few months.
That's what it's all about, I reckon. And for each of you, so Jasmine, what's your history in the beer industry?
Yeah, so Chris, I've actually been in the industry for just on 6 years now, and that's pretty much coincides with the time that I've been with Stone & Wood. It's been a pretty wild ride. So when I started, I was employee number 16, and our business has pretty much grown to around 135. So I've kind of been along on the ride pretty much from around midway. We're 10 years old and yeah, we're in a really exciting time. When I started, I looked after pretty much everything that was related to marketing and community. And since then, we've decided to keep everything in-house. So my role has basically become more specialized. I look after communications and also community engagement. And basically what my team are responsible for are basically telling our story, creating that Stone & Wood experience and essentially engaging and supporting the communities where we work and live.
I want your job, just quietly. That sounds fantastic. What about you, Sam?
Mate, well, I started just over 5 years ago, so a fair while ago as well. Firstly, started with selling beer up on the Gold Coast and then all the way down to Port Macquarie as the business started to grow, which was a really good ride, mate. Back then, slinging really great beer along the Surf Coast was just such a great ride. And then a couple of years ago, moved over to help set up our cider brand, Granite Belt Cider. And kind of managed that business for a couple of years, and now it's kind of humming along. And most recently, kind of helping out with new product development and all innovation projects. So basically getting any new beer project from ideation to launch. Yeah. So
I'm not actually sure I want to continue on with this interview now because I'm absolutely jealous of your two roles. Like, great brand, great roles. You are very lucky, guys. Well done for doing that. Now, I noticed you're both over the five-year mark. So have you both done the trip to Europe with the guys?
So I was lucky enough to go last year, and it was probably one of my absolute beer highlights. And Sam's actually going. When are you going, Sam? September.
September. Can't wait.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, looking forward to it, mate.
Sounds great. Now, when I approached you guys about doing this episode, I mentioned that I felt it was really important for brands in this crowded market to look for ways to remain relevant and break through the clutter to register in drinkers' news feeds, et cetera. Was that kind of how you saw the decision to start Counterculture?
Definitely, mate. We're lucky enough, obviously, with Pacific Ale to have a brand that's touched so many people's lives, and it's continuing to. But we also have a really strong base of core range beers like Green Coast and Jasper Ale and Cloudcatcher doing their thing as well. So they're all playing their own game, but we also need to continually adapt and modify what the business is. And that's what Counterculture's sole purpose is kind of looking to what the future beer world's going to be and being able to create and play and see what's connect, see what will connect with our drinkers. And that'll help us to define how we move ahead in the future. So that's basically what counterculture's role is.
And I think just adding to that, Chris, when you sort of say that it's a cluttered market, you know, obviously the beer world has changed so much over the last, I would say, 10 years, but even more so in the last 5 years. And when you think about it's a crowded market, obviously it's so important to be able to have that cut through. And I think for us, we, you know, from a almost like a marketing or even specifically a social media perspective, we really saw a shift change a few years ago where instead of being about continually just putting content out to put it out, it was actually like, okay, well, what do our drinkers actually want to know? What do they want to see? What do they want to be tasting? And when we put it out, it's like, okay, what do we actually need to do to be actually able to get the cut through, to get it out there that it's actually in front of them, they get to actually have the opportunity to try and engage with our brand. So for us, when we were creating counterculture, it was very much around beer focus first, but then everything that else that comes with it. So the packaging, the design, the story behind it, how we activate. And for us, that's been the really exciting journey for my team and the entire business, is actually creating these small, creating this sub-brand, which is counterculture, but then each one having its own specific personality, identity, and reason for being.
Nice. Sounds like good fun. Now, you mentioned that the Pacific Ale, I mean, that has been an absolute juggernaut in the industry and it continues to roll on. But, you know, as we see with all brands and products, the time in the sun doesn't last forever. And so I guess diversifying away from having one hero product is a pretty clever idea. But how do you find that balance between still being seen as part of that successful brand and the associated halo effect, or completely looking unrelated when branching out into something new?
Yeah, well, I mean, mate, first of all, with Pacific Ale, we were talking about this the other day. So although some of our drinkers have moved away from drinking Pacific Ale, the beer still has such a pivotal role to play with drinkers starting out on their beer journey.
Starting out, but also continuing on, mate. I love the stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was going to finish on that. Yeah. And it's also a brand that people love for what it is,
yeah,
and they'll continue to enjoy it. But, you know, there's such, it's Pacific Ale is not even a drop in the ocean of the whole beer landscape of Australia. And we haven't even touched, you know, hardly any drinkers in the grand scheme of things. So we still have a big role with our core range brands to get it out there and connect with new drinkers. So
yeah,
that's a primary focus, just like counterculture at the moment.
I'm interested in how the conversation went around, you know, creating counterculture, because it's different to your sister brand Fixation. I mean, you are effectively an extension of the Stone and Wood brand. You have a place on the website, whereas Fixation is more standalone. So why are the two different approaches?
Yeah, so I might jump in there, Chris, just to give a little bit
sure.
of clarity, because I think there is a little bit of confusion out there within the industry and probably from our drinkers just around what the difference is. So basically Stone and Wood started 10 years ago, and we got to a point where there was a lot of opportunity for us to be able to diverge into a whole lot of different types of beers and also go into other types of drinks as well. Obviously, along a lot of our journey, there was the need to be able to just keep the main thing, and also keep up with demand. But then there was also a point where we came to where it was like, right, we don't actually want to dilute what we're doing. And so that's where actually Fixation came about. It's a brand that is primarily and solely focused around IPAs. And then likewise, you've also got Grenadine Belt Cider, which is its own separate entity as well. And that's focused completely just around cider. So they're actually set up as separate entities to Stone and Wood, whereas Counterculture sits as a sub-brand underneath Stone and Wood, similar to Cloudcatcher, Pacific Ale, Green Coast, and then limited releases like Stone Beer that we do seasonally.
And I think further to that, like with Tommy Delmont, you know him and love him, and so many people in the beer industry do, only him and his team could have brought Fixation to the market the way it has.
Fair call.
And it just wouldn't have worked with the Stone and Wood team and the personnel. So it's been him leading the charge with his team, and they've brought such an authentic and original brand
and
to the market.
Passion
so
as well.
And passion, yeah.
So I guess, so what you're saying is we're never going to see, say, a counterculture incubator type of bar or brewery set up then? Or never say never?
We don't know the future, mate. Honestly, that's the thing about counterculture. There's no rules. So
fair enough.
We're playing and having fun at the moment, but who knew Fixation was going to come about and a cider brand and some of the beers we're creating. We didn't know this a few years ago, so we're just rolling with it and seeing what hits and sticks.
That sounds like the Byron Bay way to go, I reckon.
Yeah, with kind of.
I actually love the brand Counterculture with its backwards N in the logo. Is there a story around, you know, how that name and the logo and how it came to be?
Yeah, mate. So as we all know, Counterculture, it kind of started with actually Jamie Cook, one of our founders, living through the 60s and 70s. And, you know, as we know, counterculture is like the word itself kind of sums up a movement, and it's usually a group of people who are acting and speaking and communicating, coming up with ideas that are against the social norms of the time. So for us, it's that simple. It's for us within the brewery trying to create brands and beers that go against the grain of what Stone & Wood usually does. And then hopefully once we get better and keep improving, we'll be doing it for the industry as well. So that's kind of where the Counterculture name came about. And the weird N, which is we're loving, came from Tommy Millage, our really talented graphic designer. He's tried to hide the backward N in every brand so far. Obviously, with Killer Queen has an N, yeah, and Sticky Nectar has an N, but yeah, our latest brand, we're going to have to hide somewhere because the title doesn't actually have an N in it. But we try to put it in wherever possible just to go against the grain. Yeah,
that's pretty cool. So you're basically a hippie brand of a hippie brand in a way.
Well, I mean, yeah, well, the first one was kind of pushing against gender cues, and the second one, Sticky Nectar, was quite hippie and psychedelic. Yeah. So we're trying to have fun with it, mate.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast. In the words of Transvision Vamp, I don't want your money, honey. I want your love. I'm not going to ask for a Patreon donation because that's not really why I do this. I just want you to help me spread the craft beer gospel. Whichever podcast service you use, if you like my interviews, please like, subscribe, follow, rate, and share my podcast with your friends. It all helps to spread the craft beer message throughout the community, and in turn, hopefully can help those of you out there who make a living working in the industry. That's all. I'll let you get back to the podcast. Look, I know we're talking a lot about the marketing side of things here, but I think we should also acknowledge one of the other reasons that some breweries would choose to create a sub-brand. And I guess that's because it helps build capability within the workforce, and you guys are great examples of that. And it also helps keep people engaged. I mean, you guys as marketers get to flex your creativity, and so do the brewers who may have been brewing, you know, the same two or three beers on a schedule for the last few years. Has Counterculture achieved that for you as well?
Well, mate, definitely. Every day of the week now is new ideas, new formulations, new teams being formulated. So our Byron Brewery, our new Byron Brewery, which opened in November, has a purpose-built pilot brewery set up now with six
beautiful
fermenters.
Yeah.
Each brewer comes through on a three-month stint under the guidance of Josh Waters, our head brewer here, and our head brewer of the company, Keelan. So everyone's working through new recipes, new brew sheets, new ideas. If we come up from a marketing point of view, say Sticky Nectar, a design, what's the beer that's going to match it, or vice versa? We want to brew this hazy mango IPA. Guys, come up with a psychedelic fun summer vibe. We're working in unison together on a daily basis. So the brew team is so involved on a daily basis now, and it's just really exciting for them. Like you said, you know, there's been a lot of brewing of Pacific Ale over the years, but now the creation's really, it's going everywhere. And some of our Stone & Wood brewers have, obviously our head brewer at Fixation down in Melbourne, he was a Stone & Wood brewer back in the day, and the opportunities are arising to brew different beers and get creative, so...
You come a long way in 10 years, like from, you know, pretty much brewing out of the back of the garage, wasn't it originally, sort of thing?
Well, yeah, I think Jazz could talk to that over 6 years ago. It was pretty cramped in that old brewery.
Yeah. I think as well, probably just jumping back onto, you know, getting the team involved. Like from our end, ideas can come from anywhere, and it really is a team effort. We have an internal program called League of Extraordinary Brewers, and that's actually an opportunity for anyone in the business to be able to get on a brew kit and come up with a wild and crazy idea and actually see it come to life. And then we have a program in place that's run by one of the guys called Neil Whithorn, who's been in the industry for over 40 years. We call him Pops, and he's actually one of the judges. So, you know, those kinds of opportunities are what kind of can spur the initial inspiration, or in some cases they can actually be really good, where we'll actually want to scale them up, put them on our pilot batch, pull them directly from the tanks in our tasting room, and depending upon what the reaction is from our drinkers who come in to actually try these experimental brews, that's where it might actually then be tweaked further, and it might actually become a future counterculture beer.
Sounds like every brewer's dream.
Yeah, it kind of is. And case in point is kind of Killer Queen and Sticky Nectar. Sticky Nectar was a pilot beer, which one of our brewers created last year in August, and it came through to be a counterculture beer. So it's a full cycle if it's the right beer.
Excellent. So for the two of you, has been involved in the creation of counterculture open your eyes to new elements of the business that you hadn't been exposed to before?
Yeah, mate, for me, it's just pure creation. And also it's fast moving. So a lot of these brands you work on for a long time and you've got time to bring them to the market, but having a brand coming out every, a whole brand with new packaging and new design and new beer brew sheet is extremely exciting and stressful, and it sharpens your skills. So I've really enjoyed the process, yeah, working with a brand like this.
I think one of the exciting parts of working with something like counterculture is that you really do need to break down the silos to be able to make sure that it's getting to the drinker in the way in which we're wanting it to in the time frame that we've actually got. So actually having a really close-knit team that isn't just marketing and it isn't just the brewers, it's logistics, it's customer service, it's the people who are running our online store, it's that full, basically you need everyone in the room to be able to contribute everyone. And like actually pull their weight to actually make an amazing release.
And then not to mention speaking to the road crew as well, you know,
absolutely.
Fast turnaround. You know, they've got their usual daily job, but then these brands coming out every 8 weeks with launch dinners and parties like the Sticky Nectar party you
yes.
went to at the
yep.
Great Northern
great.
In Carlton, which was really
that
fun.
Was good.
Yeah, there's just a lot of moving parts. So it just kind of sharpens your skills and, you know, you just have to communicate with a lot of different people to
yeah.
get it across the line. So it's fun.
I'm assuming you guys have learnt a whole lot in bringing counterculture to life. Any gems or insights you want to share with us?
I'm just reflecting after the first few launches. For me, it's just don't get complacent. We've got to stay curious. And I think also to a point you talked about before is the market's cluttered and we're seeing a lot of the same thing. I mean, we just have to stick to our ideas and look to other industries and other markets and ensure that we're bringing something really different to the market. Yeah, we don't just want to look at beer. We just want to keep creating and using different ideas from all over the world.
And I'm with Sam on that. Something that I've been thinking a lot about is the whole concept of myopia. And I think it's very easy to get a myopic lens on something when you're focused on it every day, and especially within the beer industry, as Sam was saying, you're seeing that happen. So people get kind of narrow viewed perspectives. They're looking to others to be influenced by what's coming out. And the drinkers are bored by that. I think you were using the word before,
yeah.
Chris. They're promiscuous. They're wanting
they
something
are.
New. They're wanting something novel. They're wanting something out there. So it's our responsibility to be actually looking beyond our own lens of potentially what we want and actually going, well, what do they want? What's something that's actually really going to excite them, something that's really going to push the boundaries and actually get them engaged and curious and inspired? Because at the end of the day, if this beer is only meant to be in market for 8 weeks, you want to make sure it's actually bloody good and worth the effort, right?
Yeah. Well, that leads on beautifully, Jasmine, to my next question. So you've released the awesome Imperial Raspberry Berliner Weisse, the Killer Queen, and you followed it up with the Hazy Mango IPA Sticky Nectar. So what are you thinking about for beer number three, and when will it be out?
Go, Sam.
So the beer will be out on the 29th of July.
Oh, it's
well,
my birthday.
It'll be
yep.
That's if it all comes together. Our production team were giving me a bit of a kick up the bum yesterday that we'll be able to get it out on time, but I'm sure we will. We always do. So the beer itself, it actually went through the pilot brewery, through Byron, and received really great feedback with the tasting room crew. So we'll be brewing our French toast stout once again.
Nice.
Yes.
Well, it's like a bit of an eggnoggy sort of feel to it, is it?
Yeah, it is. You know, I actually had a taste of it last night and with Kiehl's, and it's really, really on track. It's beautiful. It's quite sweet, lactose, nice body. And now with lots of vanilla notes, but what we wanted to dial up just a little bit is the cinnamon, as you know,
yep.
with a really traditional French toast.
Yep.
So we're going to dial up the cinnamon a bit, but all in all, it's tasting really incredible. So
that sounds exciting.
Can't wait for that. A lot of maple syrup went into it.
Yeah?
We shipped over from Canada.
Oh, beautiful.
So it's on track. It's tasting great.
Mate, look, being that this is pre-recorded and that this is actually going out the day after you've actually announced the name of the new beer, why don't you let us in? Give us a scoop.
Mate, all right. So our counterculture number three, coming in at around 7.4% ABV.
Ooh, big.
It's. So just think of it as a cheat day, really. It's just
yeah.
a dessert beer. It's naughty and it's fun.
In the big can again?
In the big can again, yeah, with a really striking design. So we're going to have a lot of fun with this one. We're doing a lot of kind of some boozy brunches and working with some, you know, some really good barbecue chefs and bakers to come up with some, like, some food pairing stuff for all of our launch events. So, yeah, it's going to be really good. French Toast Stout, and the name is it's kind of a funny one. It's the first time we've ever used a statement for a beer title. we've Killer Queen and Sticky Nectar being two words, we thought, just with the beer style being so fun and cheeky, we were talking about, well, what are terms a lot of Australians use, and one we kind of loved and it kind of stuck was, you know, do you want another beer, mate? And yeah, it'd be rude not to. And also, you know, in the dessert world at home, you know, you want another piece of cake, you know, the piece of chocolate. Yeah, it'd be rude not to. So the actual title of the beer is called It'd Be Rude Not To.
It'd be rude not to. French Toast Stout. Is that?
That's it.
Nice. And this beer in winter is essentially all about treating yourself, having one of those decadent treats, something sweet, something delicious, something that you wouldn't, something that you wouldn't have every day. It's a cheat day. So, yeah, treat yourself. It'd be rude not to.
Yeah.
Treat yourself.
What a ripper.
Yeah.
I was racking my brains when I was writing those questions the other night about where would you be going with this beer, and I just couldn't come up with anything. And I was trying to think back to the party at for the Sticky Nectar launch where there was some other taps that had, you know, some of your pilot batches and stuff
some
like pilots. That on it.
Yeah.
I don't think this one was on there at that time.
Well, the thing is, we only got 5 kegs of it, and the tasting room at certain times of the year will go through 5 kegs a day if people are loving it. So, not much of it gets out there from the pilot brew. Yeah.
We have to lock it down. Well, that'll obviously be out next week when this drops.
Yes.
So, fantastic.
Looking forward to it.
Nice. Now, one thing I mentioned earlier is that I love the branding of Can of Culture, but one thing I did notice with the first two releases was, you know, obviously the can art was really out there, very different on each can. And I can tell they're both Can of Culture beers with the name around the top of the can, but some drinkers might not put two and two together. Was your idea to really branch out and break the rules after so many years of producing, you know, the standard stone and wood type of labeling that made it all look like it belonged together? Or were you just trying to stand out on the crowded shelves, or just wanted to have a bit of fun with it all?
Yeah, so I probably, to answer the first part of your question, I guess when you think about our core range beers, our staples like Pacific Owl, Green Coast, even, you know, Cloudcatcher, whatnot, up until those ones being recently rebranded, for us, our beers are around, you've got to grow the brand. You've got to create the awareness around stone and wood. And so for a very long part of our journey, it's been very much about getting that awareness out there. And in the last couple of years, it's where we've actually started to rebrand some of our beers like Green Coast, like Cloudcatcher, and we've got a couple of others coming up soon where we're actually starting to actually give them their own personality. When you actually look at counterculture, because of the nature of what it is, it's actually around having fun with it, being able to be experimental and about being creative. The stone and wood is just meant to be an endorser. And even with the counterculture, that is really just to be able to call out what range it is. So for us, we've wanted to really be led by the design and the creativity of the story and actually bring that to life through each of these releases. And as Sam was mentioning before, the person behind these designs is actually our in-house designer, Tom Millich. And there's a really nice story around that, in that he basically started working with us around 6 years ago as a freelancer. Back then, we couldn't afford an in-house designer, and so we would work with him just when we were needing projects done. He then went on to do his own projects and be a creative director within the surf industry. And then last year, he came back and started working with us again, and it has just been so awesome to be able to have a designer in-house who can actually work on the ideation with us, to work through the conceptualization of what is this beer, what is it, the story that we're trying to tell, how do we want to tell it, and what are the creative aesthetic cues that we want to bring to life, and then for him to be able to go away and then workshop that and bring it to life and then show us. So
that is fantastic.
Yeah. It's
the old story of if you love someone, set them free.
Right. And then he came back.
Exactly.
He came back with his own accord.
And it's meant to be.
That is it. So, yeah, I guess what I'm trying to say there is the counterculture range has got its own reason for being. It doesn't have to conform, and it doesn't have to be consistent consistent like what our ongoing brands are so that they can actually grow in awareness. This is about getting the hype out there, getting people excited, letting people find it, and then it disappearing.
Is that how it's going to be forever, like always in and out in 8 weeks? There'll be no like a, you know, one of them might be really popular, so they'll become a standard, you know, core range for counterculture?
Mate, that's the ongoing struggle we think about week on week. At the moment, we're saying they'll never come back, and that's the hope for them. It's just create hype. If you didn't drink them and you didn't enjoy them or have a discussion with your mate about it, you're never going to see it again. So, and that's what's kind of exciting about it. So the goal is to keep it like that. In terms of coming out every 8 weeks and what kind of can format or what design, that might change. There's no rules. So we're constantly thinking about changing things up. Maybe it'll be this style for a year of can or release or timing, and then maybe next year we'll change it up completely. So, yeah, we're always thinking about the future.
Just come out, set the social media world alight, and then walk off the stage.
Microphone drop.
Mic drop, yeah.
trying to, mate.
Yeah, that's so awesome. With it. So what's the future holding for counterculture for the next 12 or so months?
Okay, so for the end of the year, so we're trying to fit 5 to 6 beers in a year. Yep. So, and trying our best to be 2 beers in front. So at this stage, we'll bring out the French Toast Stout, and then there'll be hopefully 3 more by the end of the year, cool. All with great new different concepts. We're open to collabs, getting different designers on. There's no rules. We wanted to start with the first few beers with this kind of setup and getting Tommy working on it. But then he might come in as a kind of creative director and work with other graphic designers or photographers, and we might do collabs with other brands over time. So, yeah, there's no rules, mate. Yeah.
Speaking of collaborations, here's something that might blow your mind. What if Counterculture and Fixation did a collaboration brew? Would that be cool, or would it be like kissing your sister?
Oh, mate, I don't know about a kiss, but a big bear hug from Tommy Delmont. I'm all right with that.
Oh, so. Warm snuggle with the big fella. Nothing better.
Yeah.
Nice. Guys, I've really enjoyed chatting with you this afternoon. We're sort of hitting our time limit now, so I'm just thinking maybe we switch on over into the Fast Five if you're ready for it.
Yeah. Yeah, let's do it.
You don't even know what it is. You haven't even listened to one bloody episode.
I've listened, mate. I've listened.
Well, I hope you do well at it then.
I probably won't.
All righty. Guys, your time starts now. Has beer ever led you astray, and can you tell me about it?
Well, yes, mate. Being single in Byron Bay over the last few years, it's led me astray pretty much every day the past few years.
Friday night at the beach hotel.
Yeah, a bit of that, mate. Yeah.
Jez?
I don't have any sort of details like that. I would say every time I have a beer, I have the potential to be led astray, but I'm not letting the cat out of the bag on what that could be.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Who's the most famous person you guys have ever shared a beer with?
Oh. Well, I think you've mentioned Matt Damon in the past on the podcast.
Yep.
Well, I actually had a beer in my hand, and Matt Damon had a beer in his hand at our brewery one afternoon.
Were you drinking them together?
Yeah.
He was on one side of the room, you're on the other.
And I walked up to him and introduced myself and had a great old chat with him, and it was a great experience. So I would call that having a beer with Matt Damon.
Fair enough. What about you, Jasmine?
I don't have anyone worth mentioning,
Oh, he wins. So what has beer done for you that nothing else has in your life?
Whoa.
That's a big question, Chris.
I know. I think since starting with the company and beer, it's opened my eyes to like so many rabbit holes and so many possibilities.
Yep.
Like just creating one brand alone could go down a million different paths. So it's pretty exciting. It's also daunting.
Yeah.
But yeah, very great.
I think for me, beer is the great connector. It's a tool, right, at the end of the day. And I think for me, it gives me the opportunity to be able to meet people I think I otherwise wouldn't have met. And it's really been a vehicle for me to be able to work on incredible projects, to be able to give talks, to be able to be on a podcast like this. I wouldn't have been on it otherwise.
You've hit the big time.
I have made it. Beer is a tool, and I think it's the great connector, and I think that's the beautiful thing about it.
Great stuff. What's the best beer experience you've ever enjoyed?
Road to Munich. I'm calling it.
Which might say that.
Maybe still to come.
Yeah, maybe that'll be me in a few months. Yeah. But I think there's been heaps around the world and in Oz, but I think maybe a year or so ago, being at Tofino Brewing on Vancouver Island.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of surfing in the snow, seeing an orca in the same day, and then finishing the day with a kelp stout at Tofino Brewing is pretty special, mate. Mm. It was pretty memorable.
Kelp stout,
yeah,
nice.
If you ever
nice.
Up that way. Yeah, they harvest it off the beach, and it's just a really great little community.
Just lock that little really idea nice. Away for a can of culture beer later on, perhaps.
Right.
Maybe.
Kelp from Byron Bay? Yeah. No, I don't know. What's the most important thing you've learned in your craft beer journeys?
Oh, I think for me, just don't take things too seriously. It's beer at the end of the day.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's meant to be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
One of our founders, Ross Juricic, who's pretty
I like him. He's a good bloke.
He's a legend. He's a legend, yeah. And he's got some pretty interesting thoughts on the world. And he always tells us and reminds us, we're not saving lives. Have fun with it. So I think for me, the most important thing is that, you know, at the end of the day, everyone's seeking connection and belonging, and beer really enables that. It's from the people by the people. It's the great leveler. And I think that's the best thing about beer.
Beautiful. Love it. Love it.
Beautiful.
And the last question in the Fast Five, number six, can you guys help me get Chris Hemsworth on the podcast?
He's a fan of Pacifico. So.
He is.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
I've got all these people sort of skirting around the edges. I spoke to B. Durbidge last week, and he's mates with him, and he mentioned Matt Damon, and everybody's sort of around the edges, but no one will commit to actually getting him in the room onto a podcast.
Well, mate, he's always floating around town, so I'll ask him next time I see him.
Once he's finished that house, maybe he'll have a bit of time, extra time to spend. I can ask him to set up a podcast studio in the house. I'm sure there's room.
Perfect.
Guys, it's been fantastic chatting with you guys this afternoon. I've really enjoyed it. I love what you guys are doing at Stone and Wood and Counterculture, bloody at Fixation as well. It's all great stuff. You're awesome for the industry, and it's awesome to hear you guys are just like so engaged and energized with what you're doing. It's quite infectious. So thanks very much for your time today, and cheers to great beers.
Thank you so much. Well, yeah.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Good chat, mate.
Beautiful work, guys. That was bloody fantastic. Thanks for tuning in to another Beer Healer interview. I really hope you guys enjoyed the episode as much as I did. If you want to follow along with more Beer Healer content, you can check out my Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram pages. Just search Beer Healer, or you can visit beerhealer.com. If you like the podcast, can you please help me spread the word by subscribing and rating it and sharing it with your beer-loving friends?